Welcome to the third video in this four-part introduction to Microsoft R Server. In the previous session, we learned how to import data into Microsoft R Server and learned about the XDF file format. In this session, we'll learn what to do with your data after you've imported it, including creating variables, modifying variables, sorting, merging, and those sorts of routine data manipulation tasks. First, just a brief recap of what Microsoft R Server is. MRS is an extension of open source R that allows for parallel processing. And if you're on a workstation, that could include all of the cores of your CPU. And if you're on a cluster, that means that you can combine processing across all of your nodes. It also allows for on-disk data storage. One of the major limiting factors of open source R is that it can't hold data sets that are larger than its memory. But when you move data storage from memory to disk, you can essentially take advantage of the much larger disk sizes that are available, and also much cheaper disk capacity compared to memory. Last time we also talked about the XDF file format, which is MRS's native file format. The XDF files store data in chunks so that as it's written down, it can be appended easily onto existing data, and it can also be read up and distributed to your nodes in a quick and fairly independent way. Within each chunk, data is also stored in a column-oriented format. And when we're doing statistics and machine learning, we're usually a lot more interested in entire columns of data than in, for example, a more traditional software application format, where we might be interested in querying an entire record at once. So column orientation lets us query entire variables more quickly than we would in a row-oriented traditional database. As I mentioned, because data is stored in chunks, it's fast to append new data, and you can append new data to an XDF file without rewriting the entire file, which if you have a data set that stores data over a long period, that can be a significant advantage because you don't want to rewrite that file, which could be terabytes, every time you get a new week's worth of data for it. And finally, XDF files also work on distributed file systems like HDFS. So in our session today, we'll be talking about managing data in XDF files. And these are just sort of the traditional data management tasks. We'll subset rows based on criteria, select variables by their name, we'll create new variables and modify existing variables, we'll sort and merge. And actually, we'll start off with the sorting and merging because they're relatively simple and straightforward. And for those tasks, we'll use rxsort and rxmerge. And then for all of the remaining tasks, we'll use the rxdatastep function, which is really the workhorse function in MRS for data management. We'll start by looking at the rxsort function for sorting datasets. And for sorting, it's pretty straightforward. And if you've ever used something like a software program like SAS, this should seem pretty familiar. Essentially, we want to sort a dataset using one or more variables, and the argument that we need to pass to rxsort for that is sort by vars. And then we can also dictate whether each of those variables are sorted in an ascending or descending manner using the argument decreasing, which can take a value for every variable in sort by vars. So if you have three variables, you could say that you want the first one ascending, the second one descending, and the third one ascending again, which is a nice advantage over open source R, which struggles a little bit to do those sorts of things. Let's take a look at an example. So first, I'm just going to pull in an example data set. This is the mortgage data set that we used a little bit in the previous session, and it's one that's built right into Microsoft R Server. So you have access to this data set as well, and if you use this command right here, you can import it. So I'll set up a pointer to that CSV, like that. And then I'm going to use the function temp file to to create a temporary XDF file that will only exist as long as my R session is running. So I'll go ahead and run that. And then finally, this should be pretty familiar to you from the last session. This is RX import, and I'm just going to specify in data as and point that to my CSV path. And for my out file, I will point that to my temporary XDF, which doesn't exist yet, but I'll create right now. And I can see I get a little output here in the console from MRS letting me know that it is indeed reading in those 10,000 rows from the data set. But it's always a good idea to check. And to check that that data was correctly imported, I'm going to use the rxgetinfo function. And I'll point it to my temporary XDF file. I'm going to set getvarinfo to true so that I can see some additional information about the variables that are imported. And I'm going to set numRows equal to 5 so that I can see the first 5 rows from that data set. And so you can see here in the console, I've got 10,000 observations of 6 variables. They've all been stored in one block because 10,000 is not really enough to warrant multiple blocks or chunks. And then here I can see I've got 6 variables. Credit score, house age, years employed, which is years of employment of this bank customer, CC debt or credit card debt, the year of this data. As you can see from the metadata here, it says low of 2000, high of 2000. That's because this particular data set is just the mortgage records from the year 2000. And finally, I have my default variable, which is stored as an integer, 0 for no default and 1 for a default. And then finally, I have my first 5 rows here, and you can see the credit score, house age, years of employment, credit card debt year, and default records for those first 5 people. So now I'm just going to experiment with sorting those records. And to sort them, I am just going to create another temporary XDF file here. I'll call that one XDF sorted. And then my in-date for RX sort, you can see it's very similar to the MRS functions we've seen so far. It still has the RX prefix, so I know that I'm working with an MRS function rather than a function from open source R. And then for in data, I point it to the temporary XDF file that I created in the previous step. For my out file, I'm going to point to my new XDF sorted temporary file, which doesn't yet exist. And then for just a simple sorting, all I need to do is pass the name of a variable I want to sort by to the sort by vars argument. So in this case, I just want to sort this data set by credit score. So I pass the name of that variable to sort by vars. And so you can see I've got quotes here. Often in MRS functions, when you're naming a variable, you'll be doing it with quotes. So that's just something to keep an eye on. So I will go ahead and sort that. And you can see I get a little bit of output as well here. It's talking about the number of rows and columns. And it gives me a timing on that sorting, which, as you would expect for 10,000 rows, doesn't take very long. And as always, I'll check the results. And so I can see now that I do indeed have an ascending order by credit score. And so it's important to remember that RX sort is always going to sort ascending by default. And so credit score here is sorted ascending. And you can see that there's nothing being used to break ties right now. So if I wanted to sort by decreasing credit score, I would simply use the argument decreasing and basically keep the same format, in data, out file, sort by vars equals credit score. Now I'm just going to set decreasing equal to true. And of course, I'm going to set overwrite equal to true as well because I want to overwrite my existing XDF sorted file right now. So let me run that again. And you can see now that credit score is flipped. I've got the highest credit scores at the top, 895 instead of the low 400s, and they're descending from there. Now, if I wanted to sort by two variables at the same time, I can do that. You'll just see here on the left, I am passing two variable names to credit score by creating a short character vector here with just two values. I'll sort first by default and then by credit score. And in this case, I want to sort these by these two variables in opposite directions. So I want to sort default by decreasing and credit score by increasing. And so what that'll do is it'll put all of my defaulting bank customers at the top, but then sort them in decreasing order of credit score. So let's take a look at that. And so you can see here, by looking on the right side of the output, that indeed all of my 11 defaults are right here at the top, and then the 12th, 13th, 14th, and 15th records are zeros, indicating that those customers haven't defaulted. But then within my defaulted customers, I have ascending credit score. So here at the top, I have my defaulting customer with the lowest credit score, which is a fairly healthy 608. And then going up from there, I have my highest rated defaulter at 745. So as you can see, it's straightforward to add multiple sorting variables and to change the direction of those sorts independently. Now, as in other statistical software, the sorting function here is also used for deduplication. In large part, that's because you have to sort records before you start deduplicating. So in this case, I'd like to deduplicate based on default and year's employment. So I'm going to use those as my sort by vars again. So I'll specify them just as I have before. And I'm going to add one new argument, which is remove dep keys. And I'll set remove dep keys equal to true. And so essentially that's saying to remove any duplicate keys. And in this case, the keys are my sort by vars. And I am going to add one extra. This is an optional argument, but it can be a nice thing to use when you're deduplicating. I'm going to set dupe freak var to the word freak, short for frequency. And by providing a name for this variable, what RxSort will do is, as it deduplicates through the data set, it'll keep track of how many combinations of those two keys, default and year's employment, finds. And then at the end, it'll give me a column that indicates how many of those it found for each one. This is a strictly optional argument. I could just delete it or leave it blank and not end up with those results. But it's always kind of a nice thing to do when I'm deduplicating. So I tend to stick to it. So I'll go ahead and run this. And you can see now for this Rx data step that I've been using to print the results to the screen, I didn't set any numrows limit to it. So these 21 records that have printed are all 21 unique combinations of default and years employ. And if we look here at years employ, we can see that it's ascending from 0 to 14 among those who haven't defaulted, and then ascending from 1 to 8 among those who had defaulted. And here on the end, I have the freak column, which lets me know that there are very few people who have defaulted and very few people at each level of employment who have defaulted. Whereas among those who haven't defaulted, I get a much better view of sort of the overall distribution of years of employment in this particular sample, where there are quite a few people with 4 or 5 years of employment, and relatively few with more than 10 years of employment. So that's really all there is to RxSort. You pick your keys to sort by using sort by vars. You indicate which direction you'd like to sort by using decreasing or increasing for each of those keys. And then you can use remove dup keys to deduplicate your dataset based on those variables that you've picked. Another extremely common data management requirement, particularly when you're working with relational databases, is to merge different tables of data together. And in Microsoft R Server, that functionality is provided by RxMerge, which gives you sort of all the classic SQL joins, as well as the SQL union functionality. And there's some nice things about RxMerge. We'll take a look at it here in just a moment. But you don't need to do any pre-sorting. It'll do that as necessary on its own. It also lets you rename keys on the fly. So if you have two data sets that you'd like to merge together and their keys, for whatever reason, aren't matched up correctly, you can change those keys on the fly as you merge them together without needing to modify the original data sets. And finally, RxMerge also has an option that will allow you to append a unique suffix to each of your variables that are duplicated in both data sets. So if you merge two tables together and they both have a date variable, for example, you can automatically append a suffix to each of those date variables that indicates which table it came from originally. So let's take a look at an example. In this example, we're going to turn to sort of a classic data set of flights and airports. So let's take a look at the flight table to begin with. So you can see I've got a data set here of flights for particular days, their departure times, whether or not they were delayed at departure, their arrival time, whether or not they arrived late, the carrier for that particular flight, the tail number of the plane, the flight number itself, its origin airport, its destination airport, the amount of time that it spent in the air, the total distance it covered, and the hours and minutes of its departure. So for example, this first one, this flight departed at 5:17 a.m. The second flight departed at 5:33 a.m., and so on. And in my second data set, I have the details of all of those airports, the origin and destination airports that we just saw, listed here with their FAA airport code, the name of the airport, the latitude and longitude of that airport, its altitude, which time zone it's in, and then whether or not it's that time zone is one that practices daylight savings time. So clearly there are some details of this table about airports that I'd like to merge on to my flights table. And so to do that, I'll use RxMerge. And first, I'll create a temporary XDF file here to store the merged data sets. And I'm going to call this flight origin because in actuality, if we look at the flight tables again, I have two airports related with each flight, the origin and the destination. And so then in order to get details about both, I'll need to make two merges. So we'll start with the first one. I'll merge on the origin details for each flight. So I'll create my temporary XDF file. And then here we can see the RxMerge function. And it takes the very familiar inData argument, except it needs two of them. So I have inData1, which will be my flight table. I have inData2, which will be my airport table. And then finally, I have just a single outfile argument, which will be my flight origin XDF file that I've just created here. Now, the type of join that I want to set is specified pretty simply just with the type argument. And in this case, I want information for all of my flights. But I'm not particularly interested in airports that don't have a flight in my data set. So I'm going to use a left outer join, which I can do by specifying type equals left. And so that will make sure that every flight in my flight table is kept in the merged data set, but any airports that aren't related to one of those flights will be dropped in my final data set. And I also need to tell RxMerge how to merge these two tables together. And so on my flight table, my key variable is called origin, but on my airport table, my key variable is called FAA. So I can only specify the keys if they match. And so first I just need to temporarily rename FAA to origin. And you can see here that I'm specifying that FAA should be renamed to origin using a named character vector. And so if you're not familiar with those from R, essentially it's like a key value pair in any programming language, where on the left I have my key, which in this case is the name of the original variable, FAA. And then on the right, I have my value, which is the name that I want to be, that I want that variable to take just for the duration of this merge. So now that I've renamed FAA to origin, I can pass the final argument that I need, which is to specify that my matching variables, or my match bars, will be just the variable origin. So I'll go ahead and run that code and print just a little bit of the results. And you can see now that my origin airport on these first few flights, they're all EWR, which is, as I can tell by looking over here at the newly added name variable, that's Newark Liberty International. I've got the latitude and longitude for Newark here, as well as its altitude and time zone. So the next step is to merge on my destination airport details, and that way I'll be able to have the same details for both, for every flight's origin airport as well as its destination. And you can see that this merge is pretty much exactly the same as the first one. In data one is my merge table that I just created, but in data two is still the original airport table. And my out file is a new XDF file that I'm creating to hold this final data set. I'm still using a left outer merge, left outer join. And I'm still renaming FAA, except this time I'm renaming FAA to DEST so that it'll match the destination airport rather than the origin. And so I'm also specifying that my match variables should be DEST. And I'm adding one extra argument this time, which is that because I'm merging the airport table on twice, I'll end up with two sets of essentially identical airport variables. It's just that the values for one will correspond to the origin, the values for the second will correspond to the destination. And so I want to make sure that I have some way to be able to tell those variables apart. If I just have two sets of latitudes and longitudes, that won't be helpful for me. And thankfully, RxMerge includes a function that can do this. And so that is the duplicate var ext argument, or the duplicate variable extension argument. And the first value that I pass will be the extension added to the names of those variables if they're on the first data set in data one. And the second value here will be the name added to those variable names if they're on the second data set in data two. And so let me go ahead and run that so you can see what it looks like when those suffixes are added. So you can see I get quite a bit of an output here, but then here in the lower half, I get name.origin, lat.origin, lon.origin, etc., which is the extension there telling me that, you know, those are the airport details that correspond to the origin airport. And then I also have name.dest, lat.dest, lon.dest, etc., and those I can tell are the airport details corresponding to the destination airport. So those are really the essentials of RxMerge. And as I mentioned, all of the classic SQL joins are available with RxMerge. So I just put together a table here to show you, sort of to help you map between either SQL or open source R to Microsoft R server. And so you can see with the inner join, that's a sort of the classic default join. In open source R, you would get that using the merge function with all equals false, because you're not going to keep non-matching records from either data set. In Rx merge, you would just specify type equals inner. As we saw in the example, the classic left outer join, in open source R, that's all.x equals true, because you want to keep all of the records from your left-hand data set, which in merge you would call x. And in Rx merge, we just set type equal to left. In SQL, the union statement stacks data sets on top of each other. And we can do the exact same thing in open source R using the rbind function, which stacks data frames on top of each other. In Rx merge, we just set type equal to union. Now, finally, that lets us stack rows, but in open source R, there's also a function corresponding to rbind called cbind that binds columns together without doing any sort of merging on keys or anything. It basically takes the variables from your first data frame and slaps them right next to the variables from your second data frame, regardless of order, regardless of keys. The only thing that's required is that they have the same number of rows. So that's kind of an unusual join, if you could even call it a join, but you can do that in Rx merge as well. And the argument that you would set there is the Rx merge type equals 1:1. So now we've done merging and sorting, and pretty much all of the other data management functions in Microsoft R Server will be handled by Rx data step. And those functions include subsetting rows based on criteria, selecting columns by name using the vars to keep and vars to drop arguments. We can create and modify variables, which in Microsoft R parlance are called transforms. And we can also pull data into an in-memory data frame, whether to work with it using open source R functions or just to print it to the screen. And you may have noticed as I've been working through these examples, I often use Rx data step to print either the first few rows of an XDF file or the entirety of a small XDF file to the console, just so that you can take a look at it in this recording. So first, let's take a look at subsetting rows. The corresponding argument for this action is the row selection argument, which ultimately takes a logical vector, just like the subset function from open source R. Now, you can create that logical vector by chaining together many different comparisons. So you can specify a single comparison, just like you would in the subset function. And you can also chain those comparisons together using the logical and the logical or operators, just as you would in open source R. And finally, you can also use the numRows argument to specify just the first n rows of a data set, which, you know, is certainly not a random sample or anything like that, but is a good way to just sort of get a quick peek at the first n rows of an XDF file. So let's see an example of these criteria and how you can use them to subset an XDF file. So to start with, I'll just make a simple subset of our flight data that we were just looking at. Let's say that I want to look at just flights that were run by United Airlines. I'll go ahead and create another XDF file for them. And then you can see here, Rx data step has the very familiar inData argument. I'm going to pass my flight table. It also has the addFile argument. I'm going to point that to my new XDF file. And then finally, I have row selection here. And you can see row selection is just accepts this very simple comparison where I'm saying that I want the carrier to only be equal to UA, which is the abbreviation for United Airlines. So when I run this comparison, This carrier equals UA comparison will evaluate to true, false, or NA for every flight in flight table. And wherever it evaluates to true, RX DataStep will pull those records into my new United Flights XDF file. And so you can see here, just taking a peek at the first few rows of my new United Flights XDF file, I can see that they are indeed all from United Airlines. Now, if I wanted to add a second criteria to that, I can do that. Let me just make a quick copy of my data set here. Now, let's imagine that I wanted only United flights. Let's say that I wanted only the United flights that were leaving LaGuardia Airport in New York City. So to add a second criteria, I just use R's logical operator, which is the and I'll set origin equal to LGA, which is the abbreviation for LaGuardia. So you can see the full syntax here is row selection equals carrier. So you can see I use a single equal sign for the argument assignment. And then in my two comparisons, I'm using a double equal sign, carrier equals UA, and origin equals LGA. So I'll go ahead and run that. And you can see now in my results, I have carrier is equal to UA again, of course, but then here in my origin column, I also have nothing but LGA. So you can stack essentially as many criteria as you need to achieve the particular subset that you're looking for. And you can also use OR criteria and so on. So pretty much the full power of R comparisons is available to you here in the row selection argument. I can also select which variables I'd like from a data set, much like I would in a SQL query. And in this case, I'll do that using the vars to keep argument. And you can see here, I'm going to name just the variables that I'm interested in by creating a character vector here that I pass to vars to keep. I'll go ahead and run that. And you can see I've dropped some of the extraneous variables here, and I'm down just to the date, the carrier, the flight number, origin and destination, and the time in the air and the distance. So there's no reason that you can't use vars to keep in addition to row selection in the same data step. So I could say row selection equals, let's say I'll subset to the LaGuardia flights again. So I'll say origin equals LGA. And so you can see now I'm getting the same results, just a handful of variables, and all flights originating at LaGuardia. And there are big advantages to being able to stack multiple data transformations like this into a single RX DataStep call. And the idea there is that as you get to larger and larger data steps, it's larger and larger data sets, it's not so much the computation time that's your bottleneck, but rather just reading data off of disk into memory so that it can be operated on. And so because in MRS, you're often working with data that's too big to fit into memory, most of it is on the disk. So you have to read each chunk into memory, operate on it, and then write it back out to the disk. So the more operations that you can combine into a single RX data step call, the more that can be done with each chunk of data while it's in memory. And so then you save yourself the time of repeatedly reading and writing the same data just to make small changes. So all of the data management operations that we'll be discussing here in RX data step can be combined into a single call. Now in RX data step, the argument that you'll use for creating new variables, modifying existing variables, changing variable types, and so on, is an argument called transforms. Now, transforms takes a list of arguments, which is a little strange to get used to. But a list is a really versatile way of passing information into the RxDataStep function. And so it lets you specify a name, and it lets you specify pretty complex transformations, even just in this one argument. And so let's take a look at creating and modifying variables. So to create a new variable, I'm back to my United Flights data set here. And so to create a new variable, I'll call my transforms argument. And then I'm going to pass it a list. Even though I'm only making one transformation, I still need to give it a list. And on the left-hand side, within the list structure, on the left-hand side, I'm giving the name of the variable I'd like to create, which in this case is speed. And on the right-hand side, I'm specifying how speed should be created. And in this case, I want to divide distance traveled by the amount of time that the plane has spent in the air. Distance divided by time, speed. So I'll go ahead and run that transformation. And I can see here, now I have sort of that subset of data that I was looking at before. And on the end, I have my new speed variable. Although it's not exactly the speeds that I was expecting. It's 6 or 4 or 7 miles per unit of time. And in this case, that's because airtime is recorded in minutes. So my speed is returned to me as miles per minute, which is not ideal. But fortunately, I can use RxDataStep to modify existing variables as well. So let's take a look at this next bit of code here. I'm going to use pretty much the same setup. It's just that this time in my transforms list, the first thing I want to do is recreate speed. So I'm using the same name, and to override any variable, you can just name that variable. And this time I'll divide distance by airtime divided by 60. So that should give me the speed in miles per hour rather than miles per minute. Now you may have noticed on this data set before that our date is split into 3 columns. I have a year column, a month column, and a day column. And for a lot of operations, I would prefer to have a unified date variable for that information. And that's something that I can create in the transforms argument as well. So in this case, I'm going to simply paste the year, month, and day together into a single character vector with each component of the date separated by a dash. And then I'll use the as.date function to change that character vector into a proper real rdate variable. So you can see I can use RxDataStep to create new variables. I can use RxDataStep to change existing variables, and I can also use RxDataStep in many cases to change the type of a variable as well. So let me go ahead and run that code. And you can see here in my results, I've printed the full list of variable information here. So you can see that flight date is in fact a date. And I've also created a new variable called speed, which you can see is much more in the realm that I expected for airlines, 370 miles per hour, low 400 miles per hour, that kind of thing. Much more reasonable for flights. Now, so far we've been talking about relatively simple transformations, creating new variables, dividing one variable by another, converting three variables of numeric data into dates. Those are all pretty straightforward. But there's also a class of transformations in Microsoft R Server called complex transformations. And the way you can differentiate between simple transformations like the ones we've just seen and complex transformations is that simple transformations always depend on a single row of data. And the way to imagine that is no matter how many records you have in your data set, If you're wondering if a transformation is simple, imagine having just a single row and ask yourself, could I successfully complete this transformation with just this single row of data? For everything that we've just seen, dividing, you know, distance by airtime, or converting dates from integers into a proper date variable, all of those transformations would work easily with just a single row of data. So when we're talking about complex transformations, those are things that might depend on multiple rows or depend on some sort of global statistic like the average of a variable. And so an average of a variable has to know the values of all of the records in that particular variable. And so because Microsoft R Server has to be set up to work in a distributed context, it can't operate in a way that assumes that it has access to all of the rows at the same time. Now, that's the way that R works, because R always has the entire data set in memory at once. But when you're imagining your data sets in Microsoft R Server, your chunks of data could be farmed out to many different computers, and those computers don't necessarily have any way of communicating with each other. So if they're calculating an average, they might just calculate it based on the data that they can see. If they're calculating minimum or maximum, it's going to be the minimum or maximum of the records that it can see at that time. So when you're performing one of these complex transformations, you have to be sure that you set Microsoft R Server up to communicate results between nodes if that's something that's necessary for that transformation. To help illustrate the problems that arise when you're trying to do complex transformations, that is, transformations that depend on more than one row, when you're working with chunk data, created a very tiny artificially chunked data set. There are just 9 rows here and 3 chunks. And so you can see this data set has dates. It has 3 chunks, which I've identified here. The first 3 rows are on the first chunk. The next 3 rows are on the second chunk. And the third 3 rows are on the third chunk. And just have a single variable here, a single numeric variable that we'll be trying to scale and lag and some other things. General transformations that depend on more than one row. So the first transformation that I'd like to try on this data set is scaling it. And when I'm talking about scaling, in this case, what I'd like to do is modify it so that the lowest values in the open variable are set to 0, and the highest values are set to 1, and everything in between is sort of set appropriately so that the entire range of data falls between 0 and 1. And this is the kind of transformation you might make to one or more variables in preparation for a method like PCA, where scaling variables makes them much more interpretable and much less likely to distort your results. So to scale open in sort of the traditional R way, the first thing I would do is subtract the minimum value from each of those values. So in this case, just eyeballing it, it looks like my lowest value is 21. And so I would, from each of these other values, I would subtract 21. And then I'm going to divide that result by the range of this variable, which is to say the difference between its lowest and highest values. So I'll get the maximum value of open and subtract the minimum value. So in this case, it looks like the maximum value is 29. So I'll subtract 21 from 29 to get the range. And so that will scale all of my my new values with the minimum subtracted. It'll scale them between 0 and 1. So let me go ahead and I'll just run that. And you can see that it runs perfectly well. I get the sort of expected output from Rx DataStep. And when I print the results, everything looks fine. I haven't had any warnings or errors. But if you look at the results, we can see pretty much immediately that there's something wrong, because the value of zero should always be on the scaled variable, should always be associated with the lowest value in the unscaled variable. And here, zero corresponds to 24, but here zero corresponds to 21, and here zero corresponds to 23. And we can see the same thing is happening with the maximum values. The maximum value here is 29, which is actually correct. But then here it's also corresponding to 25, and here it's corresponding to 28. And if you look at the chunk boundaries, you can see exactly what's happening. On the first chunk, the highest value is indeed 29, and the lowest is 24. And so those are the values that are being scaled to 1 and 0, respectively. On the second chunk, the lowest value is 21, which is the true low value. But then the highest value is just 25, and those are what get scaled to 0 and 1. And the same thing happens on the third chunk. And the reason that that's happening is because, in this case, Rx DataStep isn't aware of the true global minimum and maximum for the open variable, because those values are split across different chunks. Even in this kind of tiny, ridiculous example where I only have 9 records split across 3 chunks. So to scale that variable correctly, I need to somehow calculate the true minimum and true maximum of the open variable and then pass those into Rx DataStep. Now, fortunately, Rx DataStep is really the only function in MRS that needs this kind of handholding. And that's because it's really the most versatile function. You can use Rx DataStep to do many different kinds of transformations, and with that flexibility comes a little more risk of doing something the wrong way. But all of our other functions work as you would expect. They know that they need to check the entire data set for minimums and maximums, averages, and things like that. So one example of those functions that do check across chunks for all of the appropriate information is rxgetvarinfo. And actually, rxgetvarinfo itself doesn't even check across the chunks. It just reads metadata from the XDF file itself. And so what I'm going to do is use rxgetvarinfo on the chunks dataset, and we'll see just what that output looks like. And you can see it gives me a brief summary of each of the 4 variables there. And I can see that open has a correctly identified low of 21, and a correctly identified high of 29. Even though those are on different chunks, rxgetvarinfo has correctly identified them. And so because rxgetvarinfo returns those results, I can extract them using this code here. Basically, I call rxgetvarinfo, and then I want just the results for the open variable, which looks like this. And specifically, I want to create 2 new variables in my workspace, one of which is the minimum and one of which is the maximum, and I can extract those like this. So I'll go ahead and create those 2 objects in my workspace. Those are just numeric vectors. They're of length 1. And so now I just need a way to pass those results to Rx DataStep, so that it knows, these are the true minimums and true maximums that I need to use to scale these variables. And that's where the transform objects argument comes in. So transform objects is a helper argument to the transforms argument that basically lets it access some additional objects from your R workspace. And so again, it's helpful to imagine a distributed computation context where, you know, just because I have OpenMin and OpenMax here in my workspace doesn't mean that the nodes on my cluster have access to those variables. And so transform objects is a way for me to take objects from my workspace and pass it out to all of those nodes so that they can do their transformations and other calculations correctly. And so just like the transforms argument, transform objects takes a list, and each element in that list has a name, and then on the right-hand side, it takes an object. And so in this case, my names are going to be xmin and xmax, and my objects will be openmin and openmax. Now, it would really honestly be most convenient to just pass those objects in as openmin and openmax, but RX DataStep sometimes gets confused if you give objects the same name inside of RX DataStep that they have in your workspace. So I'm just going to tweak their names a little bit, which is a little confusing for me, but better that I be confused than RX DataStep be confused. So then here in my transforms object argument, you can see I've basically recreated the same transforms from before with three small changes. And those changes are that instead of calculating a minimum on the fly, I'm passing xmin, which, as you can see up here, is my stand-in for openmin. And then here I've also got xmax standing in for openmax in these results. So I'll go ahead and run that chunk. And what will happen behind the scenes, or what would happen if I were in a distributed context, is that RX DataStep would pass openmin, openmax, and my desired transformation out to each of the nodes along with their particular chunk of data. And then they'll be able to apply that transformation using the pre-calculated minimum and maximum to return the correct results. And so we can compare the naively scaled variable with the correctly scaled variable here. We can see in the case of the minimum and maximum, they match up across both scaled variables, which is good. It's always a good sign. But we can see that there are other values that were identified as the minimum in the naively scaled variable that are correctly scaled. Like 24, for example, was incorrectly marked as a minimum, as you can see by a zero. But in the correctly scaled variable, it's much more realistic, much more believable, 0.375. There are even more complex kinds of transformations than just scaling a variable, however. And a classic example of those is when you want to lag a variable. And so lagging a variable in open source R is really simple. So if we have this variable x, I can create a lagged version of x basically by using R's square bracket indexing to chop the last value off. So you can see I've chopped 10 off of x there. And then to make sure that the lagged variable is the same length as the original x, I'll append an NA to the front of it. So I'll just show you that looks something like this. And then comparing them side by side, you can see that I've pushed all of the values ahead one row, and you know, now I can use the values from the first record to predict the second to predict the third, and so on. So this is a fairly common kind of transformation that is made in many different kinds of data analysis scenarios. And it's one that we'd like to be able to do here. But as you might imagine, when we're operating on chunk data, it is not a natural thing for RX DataStep to take that last value from a chunk and pass it on to the next one to be incorporated there. So what's working with our tiny chunked data set, we can just sort of make an attempt to naively lag this variable the same way we would in open source R. And you can see that it works a little bit, but at every chunk boundary, so here's the first record in chunk 2, I get an NA. And then here at the first record in chunk 3, I get another NA. And the reason for that is that RX data step is sort of naively applying this transformation, drop the last value, add an NA to the front. It's applying that transformation to every single chunk and not communicating any information between them. Because what I would really like to have for this value number 4 is the 26 from record number 3 should have come down. But because there's no communication between chunks going on here, it was just dropped and an NA was added in its place. So in order to successfully lag a variable, I need to do a transformation that's even more complex than what we did for the scaled variable. Although just looking at the data step, which I'm showing here, it's relatively straightforward. Essentially, I'm going to have my in data, my out file, and I'm going to overwrite. And then I'm going to use a transform func here, or a transform function, to do the lagging. And then I'm going to pass a couple of objects. Now, transform func, just like transform objects, is basically a way to pass something from your local workspace out to your nodes so that they have it available to do whatever transformation you'd like to do. So in this case, transform func replaces the transforms argument because transform func has all of that logic inside of it. And I'll show you the definition of transform func in just a moment. So I'm passing transform func out to do sort of the logic of my lagging operation. And I'm going to use transform objects once again, but this time it's just passing very simple data. I'm just going to have one object called var to lag, or the variable that I want to lag, basically. And I'm going to name that variable open. And then I'll have a second object called new name, which is just the name of the lagged variable after it's been created. I'll just call that open lagged. So let's take a look at the transform function that's going to be operating behind the scenes. So this is my function that I'll use to perform this lagging operation. As you can see, it's considerably more complex than any transform that we've seen before. But in part, that's because it includes all of the logic for passing results between chunks in your XDF file. But if you look closely, you can see that the fundamental logic is basically the same as an open source R. Here's my NA that I'm prepending to the beginning of a variable. And then here's where I'm dropping the last value from that variable to make room for the NA at the beginning. But the way that I'm referring to variables is much more complex. And you can see I've got two slightly different versions of the same logic going on, as well as some other stuff happening here at the end. So let me just walk through this step by step. So in my very first part of the function, you can just the basic definition, you can see that this is going to be a function of var list, or a list of the variables. And so when you're using a transform function, RX DataStep will provide it with a list of all of the variables that are on a particular chunk of data. So when a node receives its chunk of data, it breaks each of those variables into a list element and then passes that list to transform func. So rather than working with a data frame or something slightly more familiar, inside of a transform func, we'll be working with a list of variables. And in this case, that's not too challenging because I only want to work with one of those variables. And so within the function, I'll refer to that variable as an element that I'm extracting from varlist. And then I'll use the double square bracket list notation to pull out my var to lag. Now, if you remember here in the data step, I set up var to lag to point to the variable open. So essentially what I'm saying here when I say var list index var to lag, I'm saying give me the open variable from this chunk of data. So that's all that is. It looks complex, but it's quite straightforward. So there are really two different scenarios that we have to account for when we're lagging a variable across chunks. And so basically, there's the scenario when we're operating on the very first chunk of data, and the scenario when we're operating on any chunk of data that comes after that very first one. And so here on the first chunk of data, things are very familiar. Basically, I'm going to create a new variable on varlist called whatever value I've assigned to newName, which if I scroll back up here, we can see that newName is open lagged. So I'm going to create a new variable on varlist called open lagged. And the first value of open lagged is going to be an NA, which is appropriate because there's no prior value to pull forward. It's the very first one. And then all of the rest of the values are going to be those existing values of open, which I refer to in this sort of opaque way, varlist indexed by the var to lag. And then I'm going to drop the last value from open. And I can do that using this little helper object here called .rxNumRows. And whereas in the original R definition, I used the length of the vector to drop the last value. Inside of TransformFunc, I'm going to use .rxNumRows to drop the last value instead. So essentially all I'm doing in this chunk of code here is saying, you add an NA at the very beginning of this vector, push all the other values down one row and drop the last value, and then add that back onto my data set. And so then once that piece of code executes, we'll skip over this next chunk for dealing with the scenario here. And we'll take that last value, so that's var list, select var to lag. And then I'm referring to the very last value again, but instead of the negative index that I used before that drops that last value, I'm going to use just regular index this time to keep that value. And I want to make it available to the second chunk of data because it'll be the first value for that second chunk of data. So I can use the .rxSet function to take the last value from that first chunk of data and create a new object that's available to all of the nodes. And I'm going to call that new object lastValue. And so once RxSet runs, it takes that last value and creates a new object that's now available to all the other chunks of data, and specifically to the second chunk of data. So now let's imagine we're at the second chunk of data. Chunk lag, this function, will run one more time on that second chunk. And this time, the second version of the code will run here, which, as you can see, is pretty similar to the first one. It's referring to the same variable. It has this same sort of structure where we're dropping the last value. But instead of the NA that was added on the first chunk, the very first row of the first chunk, I'm going to use the .rxget function to reach out to the first chunk and get that last value. So I assign last value here, and then I get last value here. And so it's a little confusing because when we just look at the function, it seems like we're creating last value after we use it. But when Rx DataStep is performing this operation, it'll be looking for the previous value for each chunk to pull into its current chunk. So when a node is working on the second chunk of data, it'll be looking for the last value that was set by the first chunk. When Rx DataStep is working on the 50th chunk of data, it'll be looking for the value that was set on the 49th, and so on. So depending on which chunk is being worked on, one of these two versions of the code will run. So if it's the first chunk, it should have an NA as its first value. But then here, this version of the code will ensure that the value from the previous chunk gets pulled in and correctly inserted into the new lag value. If this seems complex to you, that's because it is, definitely. But this is the kind of function that you'll only need to write very rarely when you're working on data with MRS. All of the other functions in MRS besides Rx DataStep are completely designed to make working with chunk data seamless. It's just that, you know, when you're working with a function as powerful as Rx DataStep and as flexible as Rx DataStep, sometimes you have to get into the nitty-gritty to deal with these kinds of operations. So let's take a look at actually applying this function. As you can see, this is essentially what we looked at before. I've got my Rx data step with my in data and my out file. Here's my transform func, which I just pass as an object. And then finally, I'll name the variable that I want to lag, and I'll give it a new name for when it is lagged. And so you can see the results here are really quite unremarkable compared to all the effort that went into the function. But we do have just a single NA here at the top, and then the rest of the values are correctly lagged. So don't worry too much about learning the specifics of writing a transform func just from this brief example. But just know that if you're dealing with this kind of transformation, that there are tools in MRS to make it possible for you to do these kinds of cross-chunk transformations and to communicate results between nodes. There's one more kind of complex transformation that you need to be aware of, and that's whenever you're working with factors. Factors are R's variable type for categorical data and for ordered data, and they count as complex in this case because the levels of a factor and the order of levels in a factor and the encodings of a factor can vary across chunks. A factor in open source R is essentially an integer variable with character labels for each of those levels. And when you're working with factors across chunks, it's really easy to end up in a situation where one chunk has, for example, only three or four of the 10 levels that affect on your factor. And then another chunk might have five or six entirely different levels of the 10 levels in your factor. And if you just sort of naively create a factor on each chunk of data, you'll end up with several different factors that later can't be combined into a single factor for your entire data set. Now, fortunately, unlike with lagged variables and scaled variables, we do have an entirely different function to work with factors across entire data sets. It's called Rx factors. Now, Rx factors has a syntax that's fairly similar to the syntax for Rx datastep. I have an inData argument, an outfile argument, and then instead of my transforms argument, I'm going to use something called factor info. And factor info, just like transforms, takes a list, and then each element of that list on the left-hand side will be the name for a new variable that I'd like to create. But then on the right-hand side, rather than taking just sort of a standard R expression, factor info takes yet another list that at its simplest is just the name of the variable that you'd like to convert into a factor. So in this case, I'm back to my flights data, and I'd like to create a factor out of my origin variable. And so here in my factor info argument, I have a list. On the left-hand side, I'm going to create a variable called origin f, with the f letting me know that this is a factor version. And then on the right-hand side, I have another list. And within that list, I'm going to specify that I want the variable name. The name of the variable that I want to transform should be origin. And then I can close that list and create that factor. And just to show you another example, naturally I'd want to create a destination airport factor as well. And so I could just call that destf. And here on the right-hand side, I'll just point the var name argument to the dest variable. So if I go ahead and run this Rx factors code, you can see here at the bottom, I've created two new factors, variables 17 and 18. OriginF has three factor levels, EWR, LGA, and JFK. And DestF has 94 factors, factor levels for all the 94 destination airports that are in this data set. And you can see here in the printout at the bottom, they look just the same as their character vector counterparts, but I can tell from the variable info here that they have been converted into factors. And so them being factors has significant implications for the behavior of our data aggregation functions, which we'll see more of in the next session. And especially for model building and regression functions and things like that, which we'll also see in the next session. In order to use variables like origin or dest in those functions, they need to be factors. So it's important to know how to convert them. But Rx factors is capable of doing a lot more than just converting character vectors into factors. You can also use it to change the levels of factors, to change the orders of factors, and so on. Since we have just three origin airports in this data set, it might be nice to have their full name rather than their airport code listed as their factor levels. And so I can do that with Rx factors in essentially the same way. I'll call my factor info argument and pass it a list, and I'm going to create a factor called origin f again. And this time the list starts out in just the same way. The variable name of the variable that I'd like to convert into a factor is origin. But this time I'm going to use a second argument on this interior list here called new levels. And what I pass to new levels is a named character vector. Or on the left-hand side, I have the new name that I would like for a variable. And on the right-hand side, I have its original factor level. So in this case, I'm saying that I want to convert every record with an EWR level to a new level called Newark. Everyone with an LGA level to be converted to LaGuardia. And all of them with JFK, let's just leave that at JFK. That's clear enough. So I can go ahead and run that code. And so now if I take a look here at the bottom, I can see that my origin factor has been converted to use a slightly more verbose name for the airport. And if I look at the levels here in the variable info printout, I can see that there are three factor levels: Newark, LaGuardia, and JFK. Now, the order in which I specify the levels does have a bearing on how they're treated by MRS and its functions. So you can see here that the factor levels, Newark, LaGuardia, and JFK, correspond to the order that I specified here in new levels. And that'll be the case anytime that I'm specifying the levels. The order that I specify is the order that's assigned to those levels in the data. So let's imagine I've just modified that data set a little bit to include a day of the week variable. So let's take a look at flight table now with the day of the week. So you can see here I've got a new variable called day of week that specifies which day those flights are departing on. In this case, it just happens to be a lot of Tuesdays. And so I can create a factor out of day of the week easily enough. I'm just going to use RX factors. Into my factor info argument, I will pass a list. I'm going to create a new variable called day of week F. And in the list there, I'll just specify that I want to convert day of week. So I can go ahead and run that. And I can see here at the bottom, my day of week variable factor has been created. But the order, in this case, I didn't specify the order at all. And I can see here in the output that my day of week factor levels are kind of out of order. I've got Tuesday leading the days of the week with Monday on the end, and that's not terribly intuitive. I'd like to either start with Sunday or Monday, depending on your preference. And so you can see that this order of these factor levels is also borne out in sort of the analysis functions in MRS by taking a look at this RxCube output. And we'll talk about RxCube more in the next session, but you can see that essentially what it does is give a count of the number of records corresponding to each level of this factor. And so again, I've got Tuesday first, followed by the rest of the days, more or less in order, and then Monday at the end, and that's just not the most useful output. But I can specify each of those levels, and if I specify them in the order that I prefer, the output of RxCube will also change to reflect that. So here's another version of the same code, and in this time, instead of just specifying var name equals day of week, I'm also going to specify all the levels that I want associated with this particular factor. And I'm going to give them in the order that I prefer, with Sunday first, followed by the rest of the days of the week in their natural order. So I'll go ahead and run this. And you can see here in the variable output that the levels listed here reflect the order that I specified in RX factors. And if we look at the bottom at the RxCube output, we can see that it also reflects that variable order. So specify if you have a particular factor with a particular order that's important to you and that you want to be reflected in your analysis throughout MRS, it's worth taking the time to specify the orders, specify the levels in the order that you prefer. There is one small shortcut that lets you get around RX factors sometimes, and that is the capital F function that you can see referred to here. And the capital F function essentially allows you to create factors out of integer variables on the fly, but only in the context of certain variables, certain functions like RxCube, RxCrosstabs, Our linear regression function can do that sometimes as well. But because capital F only works with specific analysis functions, we'll wait until the next session to cover that. So thank you for your attention today as we've covered the data management functions in Microsoft R Server. We've looked at RxSort, RxMerge, RxDataStep, which is kind of the workhorse for all kinds of transformations, variable creation, and modification. And finally, we looked at RxFactors for working with those variables across large distributed data sets. In the next session, we'll cover summary statistics and aggregation. We got a glimpse of RxCube just now, but that's just one of the summary and aggregation functions that's available in MRS. We'll also look at building models from the basic linear regression into some of the more complex models that are available. And finally, once we've created those models, we'll look at doing predictions and scoring and model diagnostics and those sorts of things using MRS. Thanks, and see you next time.